Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week.
Comic books.
Oh, not
thank
bookie
you for
books.
Clarifying.
Not novels. Yeah. Not nonfiction books.
We
or
read
textbooks.
55 no novels this week, and we're ready to talk about them.
All right, let's start with War and Peace by whoever that guy was.
Wow, dude.
Dostoyevsky.
Great beach read.
Wow.
Similar to War and Peace, no. G.I. Joe, number one from Skybound and Image Comics, written by
Certainly
Joshua Williams.
Certainly the war part, Alex.
Yeah, it's my War and Peace.
Hopefully peace. I would love to see G.I. Joe and Cobra finally make up after all these years.
Yes, come on, guys. Get along.
Written by Joshua Williamson, art by Tom Riley a couple of months back. We talked to Joshua Williamson about this book, and he teased it quite a bit. Now it is finally out there. And it's bringing together all the threads of the Energon universe. We got a new G.I. Joe team that doesn't know quite how to work together yet. We've got a Cobra team that is very much on the attack, trying to gather all the Energon in the universe to become the most powerful force on Earth. Pete, you're our G.I. Joe guy. So how'd you feel about this?
Yo, Joe. I mean, first off, you're burying the lead. I mean, the Baroness also on the you know.
I have a question
wasn't
for you.
Wasn't burying
Pete.
The lead so much as I didn't mention all of the plot points.
You are baroning the lead on Baroness. And Pete, how do you feel about this? Because when we talked to Josh about this, I was like, why not do this book first? And he was like, well, we needed to set up some things. And we got the Duke book and all that.
Right.
And the Baroness being sort of a Joe. But as a longstanding fan, Pete, do you not trust her?
No, can't trust the Baroness. I mean, she's classically played both sides numerous times. So I'm excited to kind of get into what's going to happen here. Interesting to have her starting on the side of the Joes here in this first issue. Fun kind of little twist. But yeah, this is an absolute blast of a first issue. Really is a fantastic nostalgia bath of G.I. Joe action here. And yeah, I love the art, the pace, everything about this is an absolute pleasure and blast here. So this is awesome.
Once a week, I'll take a nostalgia bath and just fill my tub with comics and just swim around a little bit.
It's good to treat yourself, you know, every once in a while.
Yeah, I love to relax, light a candle, but keep it away from the comics because that's a recipe for disaster for everyone. This book is fun. You know, I've really liked the way, especially the Joe stuff. It does still like sort of make me feel weird that they're all chasing the batteries that power Transformers, basically.
Yep. Energon.
Energon.
Yeah. But they eat it, right? Like, is it Transformer food?
No.
Humans can't eat it. Transformers eat it.
Yeah. No, I went to an Energon tasting recently.
Yeah,
I had some Decepticon Energon, Autobot Energon, and then they had sort of a horseradish Energon. Very spicy was the third one.
Nice. On some little toasts, some toast points.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. Is Energon solid or liquid? I guess it depends on how you prepare it.
I
want to see the bear Energon. Let's go. Let's combine our interests.
The thing I really liked about this book was Tom Riley's art and Jordi Belair's colors. Nothing against Joshua Williamson, but I just thought that was great. I think we mentioned this in the interview, but it feels like they make it feel like a newsprint comic, even though it isn't, and that comes through in the panels. I think that's really nicely done. In terms of the team, it's, and I say this complimentarily, it's very macho. It's exactly what you want about from a G.I. Joe, where the team's like just sitting there razzing each other in meetings, going out there and like firing their guns in the air. You got Rock and Roll, and he's on the drum set. You got Barbecue, he's barbecuing up stuff. You got Snow Job and saying things like, don't quit your snow job, straight across the plate.
Pete, it's what you want.
Pete, right, Pete?
None of that happens, but some of those people are actual G.I. Joes, so it's hard to make fun of you.
Yes. Thank you.
I want to meet, when are we going to meet Crockpot? That's what I want to meet. Because it's winter.
Crockpot and Slow Cooker, I believe, are called the twins.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And boy, do they get you some really wet meats.
Nothing wrong with wet meats, bro.
No, she, believe me, all my meats are slightly wet. I wanted to also compliment the way that this universe, especially Joshua Williamson's work, is really keeping Cobra weird.
Yeah.
Cobra is weird. Like, and all of the Cobra people, I'm like, wow, you are, because Destro is like, I love corporations. And that's very funny to me. And the Cobra Commander is like, I'm a freak. I'm like, I go to another snake universe. And it's like, okay, guys, you're not at all what I expected. While the Joes are so, like Alex is saying, they're so normcore like dudes that it's such a funny mix. I really, and I mean that sincerely, I really appreciate that difference.
Well, and also without spoiling what happens at the end, I do appreciate the fact that they're keeping the G.I. Joe on their back legs, you know, that like they're the underdogs here. And usually you don't feel that in a G.I. Joe. They're so overpowered and Cobra is such idiots that they're like, oh, Cobra is a real problem, except they're not at any point. Here they are. And Cobra is the ones with the winning hand. And that's a good place to put our heroes. Why don't we talk about Black Lightning, number one, from DC Comics, written by Brandon Thomas, art by Fico Osseo. This is bringing Black Lightning into the all-in era, picking off a lot of stuff that happened in Absolute Power, particularly that powers got taken away and then switched around. That has affected Black Lightning and also his two daughters in a big way. I'll tell you what, I'm not a huge Black Lightning guy. So I went to this being like, all right, I'll read this. Like, I like the team. I guess we'll see what happens. I thought this was great. This was one of my favorite issues of the week. I thought the action was huge. The emotion was big. The twists were great. I love the setup here and the place that they put Black Lightning in the DC universe. I was just really impressed by this.
Yeah, agreed. There's a lot of great kind of twists and turns in the action here. Some fun reveals. But also, Black Lightning, it's great to kind of see in this kind of context a little, like, struggling with some stuff and, like, you know, trying to figure it out with us, the reader. So I really like that's an easy kind of jumping into the action, even though there's all this stuff happened before. But, yeah, I always liked Black Lightning, and it's nice to kind of see the family in here and kick a butt, hopefully.
Yeah, I really like the way this was rooted in not just Black Lightning, but the family and sort of, the larger DC universe and what's happening. I will say there are two Black Lightning stories we're talking about in this stack, and this was not my favorite.
Shots fired.
Not even shots fired. I just think I liked both of them, but there's the other one we'll talk about in a little bit I thought was very cool.
Yeah, so the other one, very good. This one, awful.
No, that's not how it works.
That's like,
if you have two scoops of ice cream. If you have two scoops of ice cream, it's not like you finish one. If you finish your chocolate chip cookie dough and you get down to your dog shit ice cream, actual dog shit. Like, you rarely would have that level of, like, one is good, one is bad. They're all pretty. All of ice cream is good.
But I always order that. I order a regular scoop of ice cream and then a scoop of dog shit to really, really drive that point home, you know?
Man, Baskin Robbins is out of control. They got to cool it.
Yeah.
Lost me a dog shit ice cream.
Hey, guys, we have 32 flavors now, and one of them is dog shit.
You can read it. It's right on the sign.
Not a good marketing technique. Psylocke, number one from Marvel, written by Alyssa Wong, art by Vincenzo Caratu. This is taking Psylocke and spinning her off onto her own solo missions, but in the continuity of what's going on in the adjectiveless X-Men book. Here, she is being sent on various missions by a teenager, I believe, is what's happening. Pete, you seem pretty psyched about this, Pete.
Yes, I love this. Psylocke's one of my favorite characters, and I like it when they tap into her rage and her kind of detachedness. So this is a great issue, and I like what they're dealing with her emotionally and kind of physically here. So nice to see her kind of kicking ass and taking names and then being like, yo, Scott Summers, you fucking suck, bruh.
I don't think they ever say that.
No, they don't. And it's not in there, but if you sometimes think about it, maybe it could be. You know what I mean?
I think this is very – I really enjoyed this book. It gets right into the action.
Yeah, it does.
And the action, the story, and art combination here is really exciting, especially if you're – I feel like we haven't gotten a lot of Psylocke just kicking ass in quite some time. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of, like, because we have Quanon and we have Betsy Braddock, and there's this split there, and how that has all – I feel like these characters have been in sort of a confusing place for a long time. The only thing I want to talk about here with you two gentlemen is I thought her doing a psychic knife was sort of hard. Like, it was like mm-hmm. – there was, like, the sum total. It was, like, sort of an effortful thing. In this book, she's like, watch this, and she wrecks, like, 9 henchmen with her psychic blade. And I was like – because isn't she taking their brains when she does the psychic blade a little bit? She's like – and she gets their
– Yeah, a little bit.
Thoughts. Yeah, a little bit.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. A cool scene. Sometimes what happens, Justin, in comics is when a new person kind of takes over stuff, you know, sometimes they power up a person, you know, to have some fun, and then it usually settles down. But you got to kind of give them that initial power boost in the beginning.
Definitely. I love when someone's like, yeah, Batman has heat vision now.
Yeah, yeah. Or they're like, oh, you know what Superman can do? He can take his ass off and then throw it on people. And it's like, wait, what?
Throw it on them? Like a net?
Yeah, like a, that would weird, be a weird plastic choice. Net. Yeah. But yeah, I just thought that this, where they're kind of setting Psylocke as this person who's going to like chase down kids and save them. Yes. Awesome. Fun. Great place. Cool idea. Well executed. I could go on a very long run of reading that. So please do that, please.
Star Trek Lower Decks, number 1 from IDW, written by Ryan North, art by Derek Charm.
Check out here, let Alex take over.
I'm not going to talk for that long. I really like this book. This is tying into the series, but I don't think you need to know too much about it to get into this. Just an appreciation of Star Trek. As usual, I think it's almost even more of a Ryan North book than it is a Star Trek Lower Decks book, because it's got that same classic, like, Ryan North little notes at the bottom thing going on that were great in Adventure Time. I think he did Adventure it sometimes Time. In Squirrel Girl as well. Very, very fun. Just like packed solid with jokes from front to back. And I like that. Like a lot of humor books are, we got a joke every couple of pages. Nope, this is nonstop, jokes a million. Plus you got Derek Charm, who is absolutely perfect art for this sort of thing. I really enjoyed it. And Pete hated it. He thought it was the dog Pete's shit at the bottom of the Sunday.
Oh yeah,
he hates Dex.
He definitely hates this. No, this is adorable.
Lower Dex, more like Upper Decker. Am I right?
Yeah,
he likes Upper Deck Ken Griffey rookie cards way better.
Hey, way to turn that around from a shit joke. Nice work. Yeah, I thought this was adorable, fun. Feels like the cartoon. Gets a little meta, but the Zelbatron. You know, monologued about this, you know, it packs a lot of punches.
I talked for a shorter amount of time than you just talked.
No, but I will say Alex auditioned for Juilliard this week, and that was his monologue. And my fingers are crossed.
I will be doing a selection from The Stack January 13th.
Everyone's like, yes, I know it well.
Yeah, familiar.
Does Great. My lower deck... Live?
Wait, what did you think of this, Justin? Love?
Yeah, Justin.
The Ryan Northness of it is exciting. Like, I think we've all been pretty glowing about Ryan North's work on Fantastic Four, but I have missed the more freewheeling comedy.
He's done other stuff.
Yes, definitely. But not as much in the freewheeling comedy forward stuff that we sort of first met Ryan North with when he, that's what he was doing. So it was nice to see that again. I appreciated the meta jokes that were the first like six or seven pages. It took me back to just watching Star Trek The Next Generation and reading the title of an episode I hadn't seen before and being like, oh, this title is so serious. Got me.
Good jokes. Transformers number 14 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Jason Howard. In this issue, we're continuing the rise of Starscream as the void left by one of the other planes. I'm forgetting which one. Soundwave, Pete?
Maybe? Soundwave's
not a plane.
Is he a radio?
He's the boombox. Come on, dude. Okay.
And is he the guy that sends
cassettes
that are birds.
Eject.
Sorry, I know it sounds a little less cool when we say it this way, but he's a boombox that sends out tapes that are birds.
Eject. He's like the best one. I can't believe you were just like,
here's the thing. Just to be clear, anyone who didn't watch the original cartoon thinks we're psychopaths. Especially you, Pete, where you're like, you know what's cool? He let a bird out of his chest that was a tape, but it was a bird. And it didn't play music because that's what boomboxes did.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
My son and I finished watching Transformers Revenge of the Fallen the other day, a.k.a. Transformers 2. This doesn't seem to be following the continuity of that at all.
Whatever. Nice humble brag. You have a kid. Congratulations. All right. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is
Soundwave
like...
has a kid named Razorbeak. He shoots him out of his chest.
Nice.
You're the same.
So, yeah, this is just absolutely badass. I mean, I lost my shit when I saw what they did to Starscream. I mean, oh, man, that is a horrible idea. Starscream is going to murder people for that. I loved how Starscream is calling humans squishies. It's hilarious. This is just such a kind of fucked up turn to 11 version of Transformers in such a cool way because it's in Daniel Warren Johnson's capable hands. The art on this is absolutely glorious. This is just such a kind of cool mix up of my childhood with new ideas. And you can't trust Starscream. He's a very famous turncoat. You know, the fact that the squishies were trusting in Starscream is just a horrible idea, and they learned the
Please
hard way.
Please don't start calling
you shouldn't
fella.
Yeah, do Starscream. You're a
squishy. What? We're squishies.
You're a squishy.
You're a squishy.
Oh, thank you.
This could go on all night. a couple questions coming out of this.
Yeah.
So the guy that turns into a gun, he's what used to be in charge.
Megatron.
He's in his whole thing is like, I'm the best. What I do is I turn into a gun. Could someone please pull my trigger? Because I'm just a gun.
Dude, you taking shots at the 80s fucking, like, I don't know what you're trying to do.
Oh,
right
I'm sorry,
now,
Pete.
Bro.
This in this comic. It's in the comic right here. That's
yeah, I know, but it's
comic.
Also like the origin story of fucking Megatron. So I don't know what to tell you, man. It's
I'm
like,
just saying, how does someone who is like, could someone please hold me in their hand?
Shoot. I also have a question about his size. Like, I know there's...
It changes.
It's my
second
question.
Oh, you were getting
question.
There? You were getting there. Go ahead.
Well, my second question is... He goes from being regular robot into a tiny little gun. And then the other Decepticon they find here is like, hey, we're friends, Starscream. And then he's like, now you can ride in me. I turned bigger.
Yeah.
Is that Energon?
80s cartoons, man. They're different sizes.
This is
people...
this is a present day comic book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just saying mention, the origins I don't know if you guys... I don't know if you guys have seen Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, but there's an effort
stop.
The director,
Different
Michael Bay,
stop
really
it.
Makes to show how the mass transforms from one size to another. Take, for example, the Devastator, which is made out of various pieces of construction
nice.
Equipment.
Yeah,
they really show how he comes together in that movie in the climax. And you even get to see his testicles, which is something that John Turturro's character remarks upon.
Anyways, yeah.
And that's what's missing from this book. Robot balls.
Nobody calls out the enemy's scrotum at any point in this book. And
Starscream, could you please pull?
Wait for it.
Starscream, could you please pull my trigger and dangle my balls while you're doing it, if possible?
Let me figure out.
Says anyways. Megatron.
Listen, yeah, Squishies come in different sizes.
Why are you feeling attacked? I'm come asking in different questions. Sizes.
Yeah, you know, everybody's questions. Different, man. You know what I mean? Not everybody's the same size.
These are Decepticons. These aren't Autobots. These are Decepticons.
I'm saying Autobots are also coming different sizes, dude.
If you think about it, the Squishies start human size, and then they just become blood puddles, and that's a different size.
Yep.
Great point.
Great.
I
thought we were moving on.
Sorry. No, I never – I just ask questions. I like this book, but I feel like the arcs that have come before were so tight and emotionally focused. And this issue felt like dumping out the toy box and hot gluing a couple different toys together and being like –
How dare you?
Well, I'm just saying like maybe
just
a little
amount. Just because they hot glued Starscream to a Cobra vehicle doesn't mean you could say something like that. I mean, come on.
You literally just said what I said back to me. So yep. I think we're in agreement technically.
Yeah, technically we are.
Great.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, a great time to focus on not only your physical, but mental health too. If you've always found therapy too expensive or inconvenient, now is the perfect time to try Talkspace. With Talkspace, you can get therapy without leaving your house. Just go online and tell us about yourself. We'll match you with a licensed therapist within 2 days. With 100% online therapy sessions, help happens on your schedule. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Absolute Batman, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Nick Dragotta. This is continuing the revamped Absolute Origin of Batman. In this issue, Alfred Pennyworth, who is working for a mysterious organization, continues to follow and track Bruce Wayne down as he is fighting back against the party animals, which are the goons working for Black Mask for mysterious reasons. Maybe even like this better than the first issue.
Hell yeah, dude.
The first issue. Nick Trigoda's art is next level, but I want to call out one line in particular, which when I was talking to Scott about this at Terrificon, I think, he said that initially when he pitched this book and the absolute line, he wanted to call the line AF for as fuck. Yeah, and he was like, it's Batman as fuck. It's Wonder Woman as fuck. It's Superman as fuck. And they're like, you cannot do that. We absolutely can't do that. And I love the fact that he put that in here because that's 100% what this issue is. I was like clapping and laughing the entire time. It's great.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like we get to see what he wanted it to be. You know, it's Batman as fuck. But then it's like, oh, I guess the kind of corporate side was like, what if we did Absolute Batman? And they're like, all right. But it's still Batman as fuck. Yeah, this is just a total blast. This is so epic. Amazing cover, by the way. But man, you can't say enough about the fantastic art that just kind of sucks you into this absolutely AF Batman world. And I just had an absolute blast reading this. The Scott Snyder guy, whew, what a writer. Just coming up with great ideas after great ideas. This guy is going to go places, man. I tell you what, keep an eye on this upstart.
Well, and to talk about Scott a little bit more, I feel like when you have someone who has been just so immersed in Batman for so many years, like all the ideas like get sort of distilled or like heightened. It's like when you leave, if you're infusing something in cooking and you just leave it on, leave the herbs in there for so long, the flavor gets so intense. And that's what this is. It's touching on so many different things. We get a great, I want to say it's a reference to the Almost Got Him episode from Batman the Animated Series in here, where we get just this like super wild take on that. Right? Am I?
Well, wait, are you talking about the poker game?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a riff on that for sure. I wanted to call out that sequence though, just because even more than the stuff where like Batman is burning his face on buildings or driving a Batmobile that's as big as several floors of a building.
He's like, hey, you're in my car. Yeah. It's a building. It's like, he's a transformer, Batman.
Yes. Yeah. But that scene, so in this continuity, Batman grew up with all of the villains. They're all in different places now, but they get together for this poker game. And it's such classic Batman that they don't know he's Batman. He's Bruce Wayne. He's getting information on them, but also bonding with his friends and playing poker at the same time. And every single phrase is so delicately constructed to convey all of these things simultaneously. And in the fact that some of these pages, Nick Jorgota is doing like 18 panels on a page, where some of them are just like insets of people playing cards and things. It's wild.
There are some panels that are just like a security camera just alone watching stuff. But it's just like wild. This Batman is obsessed with branding. All of his hideouts form a bat on the map. He makes a bird building burn in his face. I was like, dude.
Batman's buttoned up, bro.
Yeah, when you're just starting out, you got to get that branding out there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Nope. 100%.
Amazing Spider-Man number 61 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Ed McGuinness. The Zeb Wells era is over, and now we're entering this new era, or at least this run called The Eight Deaths of Spider-Man, where Spider-Man is being recruited by Dr. Doom to take on the agents of Sidorak, the demon that powers the gem that powers Juggernaut, though that doesn't really play into here too much. Mostly, he's going to have to go through a bunch of trials, die a bunch of times, and hopefully save the world in the process. Pete, I'm curious to hear from you because, like we talked about with the last issue, you were very back and forth, mostly back on the previous Spider-Man run.
Now
that we're into this, have you come forth?
Yeah, this is a nice breath of fresh air. I really love this kind of start here and this kind of refresh on Spider-Man, if you will, here. This is a ton of fun. Great seeing Doom and fun what happens to Spider-Man. I don't want to spoil it here with the but, man, just very cool. Love the kind of mix of art styles that really fits the story that I thought was very cool. And great ending. I'm really excited to see where this is going.
It's very funny to me that you're like, finally, we get this like chill return to normal Spider-Man. When this is like so weird compared to like the status quo of Spider-Man. I don't even say that as a negative, but this is just such a different take. We're getting into, it reminds me of, I can't even think of who did these type of story. Some of Dan Slott's stuff felt like it would be like another average day for Spider-Man. Now he's doing this. Now he's hanging out with Galactus. I like the Doom drive here. I think that it doesn't quite make sense why he'd call up his old pal Spider-Man to be the defender.
Well, he says that too. He's like, it's weird that I'm talking to you. You're kind of beneath me.
Yeah.
But I have a question, not to interrupt, about the whole like rollout of this Doom thing, because since they had to blood hunt, they built up that
blood hunt.
Doom is now Sorcerer Supreme, and he built this dome over Latveria, and there's like, he hasn't emerged yet. What's he going to do? What's going to happen? We know, because they've teased this, they're going to do this whole One World Under Doom event where he emerges and basically declares himself Emperor of the World. That's coming up next year. I'm like, cool. except for that one time he had a business meeting with the Avengers in ghostly form, and this thing that he's doing with Spider-Man that seems unrelated to all that. So it's just kind of like a weird rollout of this, where there's just kind of these things happening before the main thing.
Well, he's just texting a couple people. He texted the Avengers, now he's texting.
For sure. Yeah, why are you mad at Doom, bro?
I like Ed McGuinness's art here. It is very old school John Romita Sr. Feel to it going on, which was kind of surprising. But you know,
cool vibes.
And I thought that like the real body horror stuff we're getting here, I feel like this is about Peter suffering. We get his sort of usual day-to-day sufferings of being late all the time. I like that Shay is continuing. Spider-Man's sort of the woman that he's dating. I hope that continues on. That's something that I want to see more.
What's your favorite thing about Shay, by the way? Just to...
Well, I will say I think what she's done a lot of is sort of been accepting of him being late all the time and been sort of funny
right,
about
no, no, but that's about Peter. What's like a characteristic of her as a character you're really enjoying?
That's why I'm asking for more, because there isn't anything there.
Right.
I like the idea, though, that he is not just pining for Mary Jane. Mm-hmm. That to me is, we've done that for so long. I want him to progress into another relationship.
No.
So I feel like the way he is bad.
He's lying to himself.
It would make sense for everyone to abandon him, especially the way this issue sets up his relationships, where he feels like he's letting everyone down, is going to continue to do this as he fights the Sidorak beasts or whatever. So I hope we get some more emotionality while we're doing this sort of big space-style fight and death thing.
Honestly, I hope he marries Shay, and then Mephisto is like, oh, here we go, another marriage for me.
Yeah, because he's like, yum, yum, I eat marriages for breakfast.
Black Hammer, Spiral City, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Teddy Christensen. After the attack of the Anti-God in the previous series, Spiral City is reeling and dealing with that, with some...
Reeling
and dealing. I don't even know what you call it, but just prejudice towards superheroes and meta beings. They've been forced into a broken down ghetto part of the series of the city. And meanwhile, Inspector Insector has made his way over into the real world and just wants to solve some mysteries. And I'll tell you what, I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Thanks, Pete.
What I love about this in relation to the other, and just the way that Black Hammer has operated, like it just finds new avenues into story. And this feels like a much more pared down, we're sort of moving away from a lot of the central characters that we were just dealing with in the previous series. And it's focusing on Inspector Insector and some other newer characters. And the art feels like it's like, hey, we're starting over, so we're going to boil everything down to some more basic line work, some simpler color palette. And it's just smart comic making that Jeff Lemire is always working toward. And I think Teddy Christensen seems like a great partner moving into this.
Yeah, this is impressively artistic, what's happening and going on here. The way this kind of all intertwines. And we get some lows here, but hopefully Inspector Insector is going to be able to pull this off, because we're going to need him here. This is so far not looking too good here. So I'm excited to see what happens.
It makes me want, Inspector Insector is a fun title. I wish we had more of that. Like, if you were a magician, Pete, you'd be Mage LePage.
Wow.
That's pretty good, actually. I think you should go with that. Except, what is your nickname again? Squishy, I believe?
Yeah, Squishy is what you are, Pete.
Yeah. Terminator number two from Dynamite, written by Declan Shalvey, art by David O. Sullivan. In this issue, we're going back to Vietnam.
Too soon.
And the soldiers are all being evacuated. And, of course, there is a vicious robot on the loose. I continue to really like this series. I was surprised this was the first of a two-parter after we got such a great done-in-one first issue. But I don't mind, because the story's good, the art's really good. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, I was surprised how much I liked this, because I was like, all right, Terminator goes to Vietnam, what are we doing? But this was really a lot more impressive than I thought it was going to be.
It's really funny you think that. Like, I feel like this is right next to so much of the Punisher in Vietnam stories that you love. This was like right there for me.
Oh, interesting.
No? You didn't think that?
No, I didn't.
Oh. Okay. Huh. Well, I guess we're at an impasse. Podcast yeah, over. So. Yeah. No, wait, Alex.
Okay, all right. Go ahead.
Keep talking, Pete. You were in the middle. I was just...
I didn't kind of put that together. I just thought it was interesting to kind of have this... Because having Terminator in Vietnam is like whatever, but the way that it's kind of dealt with and the kind of human aspect of it was really impressive and really kind of pulled me in and kind of heightened the... I like Terminator when they're heightening the horror aspect of like, oh shit, this is this unstoppable kind of like, what the fuck are we going to do? So I was impressed with how this was kind of put together.
The idea that we can get Terminators popping back to be like, oh, we got to kill this person and then this person, that's our job. We've nipped the bud of so many other John Connors that you haven't heard of yet, I think is a great operating principle for this series. So it feels like maybe that's what we're getting, and that feels really fun. So we can go to so many different eras and see Terminator come and do his dirty work. It reminds me a lot of the Alien and Predator series that have been coming out lately, sort of expanding the universe of these characters while keeping the premise so tightly bound to the movie premises.
Toy. Action Comics 1075 Toy. From DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, Mariko Tamaki, and Joshua Williamson. Art by Clayton Henry and Michael Shelfer, Skylar Patridge, John Bogdanov, and Norm Rapmund. As you might guess, we're getting three stories here. The front story continues the Phantom Zone story, which finds a new being attacking the Phantom Zone while Superman is now trapped back on Krypton. The Mariko Tamaki story and Skylar Patridge focuses on Supergirl. And the last story is a, I would say, ill-timed election story.
Yes.
Not a bad story. It's actually a very good story about Perry White on his last night before
the mayoral election.
I don't know. I just don't want to read about elections right now. That's what I'm saying.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
But overall, really enjoying Action Comics, like I keep saying. I think it's great that it's weekly. It's bringing back those cool 90s vibes.
Yeah, you get a lot of great package in here. A lot of story, a lot of ideas, which is great. The Supergirl stuff continues to fucking kick ass. And I thought it was kind of a nice, touching, nostalgia kind of story for Perry White there. And I thought it was like the fact that he kind of runs into Clark, you know, and Clark being like, oh, man, when a place is empty, it's the only time I can get work done. It's kind of funny line. So, I just thought it was some interesting ideas.
I feel the same way about our office. I'm there a lot when you guys aren't there.
Yeah, that way you can get work done. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, you got to redo our key cards. They haven't been working for like 18 years, I want
to
say.
Yeah, sorry. I'm definitely going to get around to that. Okay, but in the meantime, I'll be there working at the top of the Chrysler Building. I really like this as well. It struck me in this. I was like, why are we going from the previous issues? Why are we going back to Jor-El on Krypton? And then it was like, oh, I see what Mark Waid is wanting to do here. Fixing the idea that Jor-El was making a prison, like a sort of a torture prison. He literally retconned that away from Jor-El and sort of purified him as just a good dude. And that was did take me out of the story a little bit, because I was like, I don't need that meta fix of Jor-El. Jor-El doesn't have to be a perfect human. He could be someone obsessed with science whose invention ended up being a bad thing, but it ended up saving any of those prisoners when Krypton exploded. So there's a lot of interesting irony there, I think. So like, we don't need to fix Jor-El, but I do like the story.
I just want to say, Justin, that's a great clarification there. The different kinds of prison there, because there's, you know, you could say prison. And I don't know if you mean like just a fun prison, but you know, I'm glad that you kind of clarified that. So,
what fun prison are you talking about? Like, with a water slide?
I'm just saying, you know, you were like the murdering prison or whatever you said. I just thought it was funny how you kind of clarified.
Well, a torture prison, because I think Jor-El is set up as like this wholesome character, but he's also set up as someone who, here's what we'll do with our criminals, put them in a ghost dimension where they exist forever as ghosts and they can't do anything or touch anything or reform or anything. So that was like a very hard line take for someone who is otherwise treated as a like
scientist,
tragic but good father figure. And I think Mark Waid is trying to be like, let me just put that back in line so we can preserve that. And I enjoyed the backups as well.
Uncanny X-Men number 5 for Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by David Marquez. In this issue, Rogue is fighting back against, I am blanking on the name of the villainous character.
Gaunt!
Sarah Gaunt, there you go, who is ripping her to shreds while the rest of the team fights against Gaunt's minions. And I know you guys are pretty high on this issue, but the cover,
man.
The weird is pretty high.
This issue's sick, bro.
The cover has Gambit charging up, shirt ripped, with a bunch of stray cats. That doesn't happen anywhere in the issue. Garbage. Zero out of ten. You're ridiculous, bro.
Alex has a little bit of a cover rage.
Obviously, you guys already talked about how much you love this issue. Justin, why don't you go first?
These past two issues sort of read back to back, where you get Wolverine almost dies, something that's very hard to do, but this, and then now Rogue almost dies here. So like, Gail Simone is able to raise the stakes here quickly and believably without getting too caught up in X-Men continuity. I love that. I also love that the way that she took a short tragic scene from one of the early issues in this book and built it out into a amazing hero. Harvey X becomes a hero here, a character that then like Rogue connects with, sympathizes with, saves Rogue, and is sort of given the title of an X-Man. And it was just like, it was such as, I could have never predicted the story was going to go in anywhere near this direction. And I really just really love the refreshing emotional nature of this book in the current X-Men universe, which feels like I wish there was more of that throughout the rest of the line.
Yeah, I agree. This was really emotionally surprising, very touching. Just Rogue being the best. I thought this was just phenomenal art. Loved all the action, loved the twists and turns and the kind of just get you in the feels there at the end. So I was really blown away by this issue. Didn't expect to have this much fun. And it was a blast.
There's a real softness to the characters, the way that David Marquez draws them, that I really like a lot. It makes them earnest. I think it brings through this emotion that you're talking about throughout. And I totally agree on taking Wolverine down a notch to a place where he actually has some limitations is great.
Finally.
Yeah.
No, take it easy with that shit.
No, I think that's where Wolverine is his best, where the old school, where like he would get ripped up and actually have to recover from things versus, damn, got half my skeleton blown up. Give me a minute and I'll be back in the fight. Like, too much power creep going on.
Too much.
There.
Cut him down. 6 claws, too many. 5.
Mm-hmm.
3.
2. It's straight blasphemy.
I can name that Wolverine in 1 claw.
Give
him one claw that comes out of his eye, like Cyclops for claws. Oh,
boo. That would be so cool. Wind, the Power of Blood, number 1 from Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV, art by Michael Dialinus. This is the final miniseries in the cycle of series. We have our main character, Wind, who is a winged dude whose blood is being harvested by vampires. There's a lot of tricky alliances going on here between different races all around Wind and his power and how they can use it. What'd you guys think about this?
Yeah, this continues to be artistically impressive as fuck. I love the just kind of world that's created here that we get to kind of inhabit with these characters. Wind's in trouble here, where we got this kind of like vampire Frankenstein's monster kind of thing growing and looming. So stakes are getting high, but yeah, this continues to be such a solid book from Boom.
It is fun. It feels like just a like halfway through Final Fantasy classic JRPG stuff, where really we're seeing the world. It's about where everyone is recovering, and then they have their mission, they have their places where they're starting, and the team really has to come together.
The Domain, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Rachel Stott. This is the spin-off of the Public Domain miniseries showing us the comic inside that comic as three people get an alien power called the Domain. Here we're getting the big fight, the finish it all, and finishing off the series. I think we all really liked the last one and felt like it sort of snapped into place there. So how did you feel about the final issue of the series?
Yeah, this continues to slap. Yeah, this is a fun issue. Action and a lot of shit goes down in this issue, which is great. Yeah, and, you know, we kind of have some people figuring things out and being able to battle back. So very exciting. I'm loving this upswing. Last couple of issues, so this really kind of kicked into gear for me, so I'm excited about it.
It feels like not the last issue. I feel like I didn't get enough of a satisfying conclusion here. Maybe we'll get more of this, but it definitely felt like it didn't bring everything together quite as I expected. Did you feel that way?
I agree with you. I think it was an interesting experiment. The best issue was probably the 4th issue, but I don't know if there's a future for this title since it is so meta. It does feel like from the world in the Public Domain, they're like, yeah, and we're going to have this ongoing series called The Domain, and we'll see where they go next. But in the real world here, I don't know if we're going to see The Domain comic continue. So I don't 100% know if that worked. Also, like, the aliens were a little goofy. It felt a little Lilo and Stitch at times to me, yeah, more than anything. But I like this. I like the characters. I like the idea that one of them...
You're saying aliens can't be goofy?
No. You are very much on, like, prejudice towards squishies and goofy aliens today. I get that.
Yeah. Like, well, first Pete, of you all, also talk like you know an alien that's fun and goofy, and I'm like...
Would you be surprised if there was a goofy alien named Squishy who was living in Pete's closet eating all of his candy? I would not be.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That feels like where we're at.
You better not be fucking eating my candy.
Wow, see, that's a huge reveal right there.
Batman and Robin, number 15 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Javi Fernandez. In this issue, Batman and Robin are trying to escape from a fire with none of their weapons.
Fire!
Fire! Their biggest enemy, fire. You know?
Yes, famously.
Yes. Like, and that's all I got to say about that. No, they're dealing with that as well as some secrets from Batman's past. Good issue, I think.
It's very sad. There's something that happened in the middle of this issue that was very upsetting, and it seems like it happened. I think the Javi Fernandez art is very good, especially the action sequences dealing with the fire. I thought were really excellently done. Batman's side of it, Damian's dealing with his thing. Batman's got to like touch a hot chain, and man, it was very visceral to me. And then when he gets it, I'm like, sick moves.
Yeah, it was pretty sick. Yeah, this was very intense, but, like, I love the kind of seeing Batman and Damian kind of dealing with the same problem kind of separately. It was very interesting, very cool, the way that was all set up. Love this intense villain that seems to be kind of growing. So, yeah, I thought this was a great issue, and I'm excited to see how this all unfolds.
Yeah, this villain is cool. I'm Philip Kennedy Johnson. Thoughtful in all of his comics work, I believe.
Yeah.
NYX, number 5 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Francesco Mortarino. This is the end of the first arc here as the team is finally together and all hanging out at the same place. A lot of this issue is dealing with the fallout that Sophie Cuckoo was betraying them.
Sophie Cuckoo! Sophie Cuckoo!
And dealing with all of that, there's some big changes in this issue as well in terms of what's going on in the old New York City. Good stuff. I really like this first arc quite a bit.
Yeah, this is fun. And also it was great to see Dupe. So I like the ending to this issue. And interesting stuff here.
The team is very chill about being betrayed. Ms. Marvel takes Sophie Cuckoo back very quickly.
Cuckoo. Cuckoo. Stop.
But I do think, I know I was saying, like, not a lot of the other books in the line have strong takes. This one does, though, is alongside Uncanny X-Men. It does feel, like, very progressive, very young, very, like, New York. And as a young progressive in New York, I'm right there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Which, real quick, which character from this book do you identify the most with?
Young,
Sophie Cuckoo? Sophie
Cuckoo? Oh, I identify with Esme Cuckoo.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, name your cuckoos that you identify.
Yeah, which cuckoo are you, Pete?
Name a cuckoo.
Piku.
Piku cuckoo. Piku cuckoo. Cuckoo.
You guys are lucky we're not all in the same room.
Why?
Because you're basically asleep at this point. Calavera.
Why Rage LePage over here wants to be angry?
Yeah.
By the way, if you could stay as far away from your mic as possible, that would really be appreciated.
Calavera, hey, no problem, buddy.
Calavera PI number one from OD Press by Marco Finnegan. This is despite the cover. Not actually for most of the running time about a skeleton detective, but don't worry, it gets there because it is about this PI who is a great PI back in the 1930s, I want to say. He ultimately, spoiler, but this is the plot of the thing, gets killed and then 5 years later is called back on Dia de los Muertos to solve a new mystery. I love the art in this book in particular.
Yes,
come on. The colors are great throughout. Really good looking book. Really good, different take of noir. Like, I do not think it's as pronounced as The Good Asian, where Pornsak Pichichot was trying to drive in on, like, what would a noir be like if an Asian detective was at the center. Here you've got a detective of Mexican-American descent, and there's a sense of that. But it is a little more straightforward noir, and it's certainly like leading up to the whole skeleton detective thing, but still very, very good.
I agree. I really enjoyed this, and man, does the art back up the story. Like, it just is a perfect synergy, and it makes sense that it's one person doing it.
Yeah, to jump on the art train here, just the mood that it sets up, the tone, the colors are just so perfect, and just sets the stage for this driving drama and ideas so well. And fun last panel. You know what I mean? We knew it was coming, but it was still great to get it.
Yep. Witchblade number 5 from Top Cow and Image Comics, written by Marguerite Bennett, art by Giuseppe Caffaro. In this issue, Sarah is trying not to use the Witchblade, even though it really would help in a lot of situations. And meanwhile, Ian Nottingham, the guy who sort of trained her, is lurking in the background.
Oh, Ian Nottingham.
I continue to really like this Witchblade reboot. It's what were you going to say, Pete?
Yeah, I agree. I'm starting to enjoy. I am enjoying this. I'm not starting to enjoy this. I am enjoying this. I like the choices that we're making artistically. It's about kind of the powers and not the TNA of old with Witchblade. So I think this is just such a great shift and great action and kind of like the use of powers and the way they're kind of dealing with it. So I'm having a good time.
It struck me reading this how much of Image Comics back in the day was just people with vaguely like cybernetic armor. Like, between Witchblade, Cyberforce, half of Youngblood, Wetworks, it was like we hold up Image as such this like creative engine. But when they launched, they were like, imagine if people had little bits of armor on them. And that's what this is far more advanced than that. And I do like sort of the way this story has unfolded. I do think this book is doing what a lot of other books suffer from sometimes, of being like constantly retelling what's the origin or how the powers worked. And I'm like, I think I get it. Let's go.
The thing that I will say that I liked about this issue in particular, that I think has not necessarily been bubbling under the surface, like it's very much on the surface, but a lot of this book is about bodily autonomy. And she has a invasive thing that has been forced on her in her body, and various men are trying to control it. And I think that's a very smart, very present way to come at it that gives it a nice amount of thematic texture. But at the same time, I know what you're saying, Justin, but in this issue, somebody is like, ooh, there's a real darkness there. And I was like, oh, he's coming. Oh, he's coming. Yeah. Oh, there's a real. Ooh, can't wait.
But I will say there's a sequence that takes like a page or so with an egg yolk that I was like, oh man, this sticks with me. This is really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Batman Dark Age number 6 from DC Comics, written by Mark Russell, art by Mike Allred. This is finishing up this series, which is set in an alternate continuity paired with Superman Space Age. And now we're seeing a different universe as well, though I can't quite tell, than we saw in the first series, because some things happen in a very different way, which was interesting. I like this. Like, I always like Mark Russell's stuff, and Mike Allred's art is gorgeous, of course, throughout. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Allred's art is just phenomenally worth it for that alone, the way that we kind of get the tones and the vibes from this kind of art. It's this cool kind of take on Batman and a different kind of like emo kind of feel to it. And the bat and cat stuff is always great. So it's fun to kind of see that kind of play out. So yeah, I thought this was very enjoyable.
A lot of this book is doing a hell of a balancing act, tones of just like fun and funny. You have Mark Russell, you have the Allred art, which is sort of associated with those ideas. And then a bunch of like very deeply tragic things happen at the end-ish of this issue. But I really like this, just like, hey, what if we just put some other ideas in Batman and ended up in a very different place? It feels like I wish comics did more of this, which we don't have to worry about the repercussions of this. This isn't about like the next step. This is just like, let's tell an interesting story that brings in some other ideas with great art and great character work.
Arcbound, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Frank Thierry. Character development by Tom Hardy and art by Ryan Smallman. This takes place in a future world where people are in arcs, which are sort of like other armor that can protect them. And
it's like spacesuit.
Yeah, spacesuit. That's a better way of putting it. Anyway, they have spacesuits, and we are following some folks in the corporation who are putting down riots on other planets that are trying to rise up against them. And things are not quite what they seem by the end of the issue. What do you guys think about this one?
Yeah, this is an amazing team on this. A lot goes down on this issue, which is great. Fantastic art. Great action, tons of violence, a lot of fighting, betrayal. This is cool. This is fun, interesting idea. We've seen the evil corporations bullshit before, so we'll.
You're talking about Frito-Lay that makes the chips that you're so addicted to.
Whoa, nobody's talking about Frito-Lay.
You do anything.
For those chips.
Dude, come on, man.
What would you do for a little chili in there? Chip?
I mean, it's just like
put a little chili in there.
Yeah,
in
a little chili in the Fritos. Yeah, come on, dude. Yeah,
Frito pie.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. I love eating out of like vaguely metallic bags.
It's a whole thing.
Me too.
Man.
Same.
Oh, I you don't have to tell me. I've seen like an animal eat garbage. Yeah,
you know what I mean, no. You just gotta go to town.
Frito pie is good.
A lot of times I'll throw my garbage outside and a raccoon will come in and just eat it with chili or whatever.
That's not a raccoon. That's Pete and his Squishy.
Yeah, that's my friend Squishy Pete. We sat down. Alex and I sat down with Scott Snyder and talked about this very book.
And I stood up and talked to Frank Thierry about this very book.
That's right. That's right. So we've covered 2/3 of this creative team. Interesting we didn't get the Tom Hardy interview.
Yeah, you didn't talk to Bane about this?
We didn't, in character. He wrote this in character as Bane.
You can tell because of the suits.
It's interesting to read this and think about, like, which of these guys contributed different pieces of this? Mm-hmm. Because Scott, Frank, and I don't know much about Tom Hardy's creative work outside of stories that I've heard about Venom. But he's definitely has a strong creative vibe. So reading this, I was like, how are these, who is pitching what ideas? How is this coming together? But like, it does come together. By the end of it, I was like, I do want to see what happens with this guy. He got a bad shake. He's Arcbound now.
Yeah, he's Arcbound, man. Violator, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Mark Andrako, art by John Wayshack. In this issue, we're jumping forward to Plague Times as Violator wanders around the city, grabbing various skid suits, battling plague doctor spawns and angels at the same time. There were parts of this issue that I absolutely loved. And I say that because there are way too many ideas happening here. This feels like power 6 issues of a series in and of its own. The things that I liked the best, I think, the two ideas I liked the best were, one, Violator walking around in Plague Times and basically being a plague himself, taking various skin suits from people one after the other. It just felt like this very neat, very precise horror story. On the other end of the spectrum, the idea of Violator's old girlfriend from heaven being there and attacking him, I thought was a very smart, interesting idea as well, with some emotional resonance you don't usually get from a cackling cloud demon. But again, too many things happening at the same time, I thought.
Well, okay. I mean, I hear you. It's valid, but I still
feeling personally attacked.
Yeah, I had a great time.
Oh, God, there's a word like right at the top.
Yeah, is there a word
head
that would feel like when you really like something's taken from you?
I think it's spawn. You're thinking of spawn.
Oh, you spawn.
Feel spawned.
I feel spawned. I thought this was first off artistically really impressive. You get a lot of like crazy body horror panels, but also some like epic kind of hell landscape stuff here. So impressive artistically what's going on, but also we kind of got to roll with Violator a little bit and like kind of got into a little bit of what he's feeling and how he's dealing with stuff. So this was interesting. I was having a blast with this, and it was also kind of cool to see like old timey spawns and these kind of like those kind of fucking masks and shit. So that was crazy.
Plague doctors.
Yeah,
Plague Doctor stuff.
Doctor setup.
The design of Violator is gross. I don't like seeing him running around.
Yeah.
And I will, the art is
would
very
would it be better if he was a clown? Would that be better or worse?
No, here's the thing, is I'm going to go back to the first issue, my objection, where they went from like, I'm an irregular angel guy, and the second I fell to Earth, well, I guess I'm the Violator now. It doesn't. It's still holding me up a little bit, and definitely in this issue when he's
hey,
like,
"Hey, Alex, you try falling from heaven and then see how you feel when you land here." All right?
Yeah.
Did you fall out of heaven? Yes. Good. I will say I don't remember how that.
I was about to say because there's stars on your underwear. That's definitely not what it is.
What?
No, that's a weird thing to say to anybody, Alex.
Yeah, you should say that's,
no. Are there stars on your underwear your name because on your butt underwear is out of this world?
Nice. Good.
Also really not good. A thing you should ever say to another human being.
Yes. Let's hold on to this. Anyone coming here for pickup lines, we've only continued to disappoint
you. Did you fall out of heaven and hit the ugly tree on the way down?
That's good. I do agree with you. Like, Violator just looks like a fucked up Muppet. And it's hardest to take it seriously when he's just like, hey, I've got horns coming at my teeth, sort of. But I do, the art style is very like, paintings from this era, which I think is really cool. Though it's very Jack the Ripper. The amount of times the Violator is like, well, my skin suit's been ruined again. Yeah. Off to kill again. I'm just like, hey,
it's
just
hard
chill.
Being a demon, Justin, all right? You're constantly ripping suits.
Look,
you know what I
mean? I get holes in my socks, and I'll, you know, sew it up.
All right, big time. I can sew. You know,
I'll take cool. my jeans and turn them into jorts.
Also, the horns are pointing to his teeth. You know, he's very proud of his teeth. His horns are
that
like,
doesn't make any sense.
Check out these teeth, man.
Biologically speaking, why do those horns grow that way?
He's proud of his teeth.
He's proud of his teeth? But I do think this very epic take on Violator is interesting. I have enjoyed this, and it is surprising, I think.
Yeah.
I just looked it up, and the reason we didn't remember a second part is because there is no second part. It's just, did it hurt when you fell from heaven? That's a weird pickup line.
That's the whole pickup line?
That's the whole thing. There's a bunch of joke answers that or continuations. We're like, did it hurt when you fell out of heaven? Because so did Satan. It's a good one. What? I was like, all right, that's funny.
That is good.
Yeah.
Because you certainly look like an angel.
Yeah, I guess that's
with like who's an injured angel,
a fallen
vaguely
angel.
Injured.
You look like Violator. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. Next time
and then cackle with your tooth horns.
Yeah. Well, anyway, DC versus Vampires World War V number 4 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg and Matthew K. Manning, art by Otto Schmidt and Aki Bright. In the front story, we are getting a lot of machinations in the vampire world and the human world as various factions are doing a lot of different stuff, including going after a baby that Mr. Miracle has. A mysterious character approaches Batgirl, who is in fact still alive, despite reports to the contrary. And the backup story that I think you were referring to earlier involves Black Lightning.
Great backup story. Really awesome. Justin,
Yes, this Black Lightning story I thought was awesome. It's Black Lightning managing the his time in this post-apocalyptic vampire verse. I love the color palette that the artist uses here is very cool, using sort of the Black Lightning colors. I love this feels like this could be a full episode of like a Walking Dead style TV show. And man, did I really just like how contained and cool this was. And the front story, I like this world a lot. It's one notch too complicated. The bureaucracy of who's working with who and who's not. When I'm like, the beauty of DC versus Vampires was, oh no, he's a vampire too. Oh no, Wonder Woman's a vampire. Like those surprises were so cool. And now when it's like, so that vampire, Damian, they don't like him, but he is a vampire. Then that's not Batman.
See, but that's the thing, man. You know, that's when you're getting into the real relationships because not everything's so black and white. I mean, some vampires are team vampire, and other vampires are like, yo, you humans got it rough being squishy.
Believe me, like, yeah, squishy. Everyone's squishy. It's a story well told. It's just like I missed the days of this book when it was just a little bit more concise and I was able to just enjoy every aspect of it.
Well, things are a little bit more complex now, okay, Justin? All right? It's not as easy as it was, all right?
I'm not criticizing it too hard. This is a very light, like, take, because I'll tell you what, I definitely enjoy any of the DC versus Vampires books more than The Hunt for Blood that happened.
Helen of Windhorn, number 6 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tom King, art by Bilquis Evely. This is the final issue of this title, as Helen and her grandfather kind of sort of settle things, or at least find a little bit of a detente and an understanding. And also we loop back to what happened with those tapes in the present. I thought the ending of this was really interesting. I wasn't sure how they were going to land, and spoilers, I guess, but it is very much left open for interpretation what happens. But it hits on one of my favorite tropes, which is stories about stories, and certainly about why we care about stories, but also how the stories inform and matter to our lives and the lives of others, the legacy we leave, which I'm always a sucker for.
Plus, the art's unfucking believable.
Yes.
But also, like you can always sort of repair your relationships by making an offer
not
to
always.
The people in your life. Well, this comic, I think, is saying that. I don't know what you're referring to. But the perhaps your relationship with our fourth host that we don't talk about anymore.
Squishy.
The ultimate squished. Are we going to get more of this? I feel like the door is so far open for more of this.
I don't think so.
But I agree. When I got to the end, I was like, it would be surprising if they came back to this, but it's so aggressively like more is coming.
I think they said what they had to say, and then you just sort of have to decide whether that was satisfying for you or not.
Well, I'll tell you what. That was an epic kiss in this. I mean, holy crap, that was really kind of funny the way it led up to it, the way it was like, oh, yeah, she's waiting for me or whatever. I got to give her this epic, unbelievable kiss. It's going to change the world.
Sorry, Pete, we rank our epic kisses of the week at the end of the stack.
Oh, my bad.
Wait, one other thing on it. There's this thing in like sort of two-thirds of the way through the book when there's a poetry lesson going on where the word balloon just appears behind a pillar.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not listening. And I thought that really, I was like, oh, what a funny
It was a
choice.
Great. It was a great was device great. To be like, nope, doesn't matter what she's saying here.
Yes. Using the form in a surprising way caught me off guard. Shouts to them.
Green Lantern 17 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Zermonico. In this issue, lots of stuff going on as our main bad guy is trying to take control of / destroy all of the spectrums of light or whatever.
That's a good guess.
Yeah, thank you. With all Green
Lantern. It's a good guess for a Green Lantern.
I still really like this title, but I think we are edging into complicated Green Lantern mythology stuff that they have avoided for like 15 to 16 issues.
And here's how you know. The canary in the coal mine is when they turn to Kyle Rayner and he's like, what do you think? And he's like, the spectrum, I contain multitudes. He's like, oh no. This is too far. This is too far.
And the thing that's a bit of a bummer about it to me is there's such a great device in here of Mogo, the planet, is a rage lantern, a red lantern who's chasing after them. And that to me, like, that's awesome. I would love to see just that for an issue of Mogo chasing after these lanterns, but there's so many other things going on at the same time. All the stuff with Mogo I thought was great. There's a moment with Sinestro in here that's very cool as well.
Very epic.
But there's a mess of a lot of other things that are happening. And I want us to get back to that simple place.
Yeah, but right. It's also kind of cool the way we get to kind of see all the lanterns, which I enjoyed. So I hear what you're saying, but also part of me kind of liked everything, the fact that we are getting kind of a lot of different options.
I will also, can I just spoil the ending here? Because I thought it was great. The end of the issue is Kyle Rayner chases after this guy, and the villain is like, Kyle Rayner is dead. And then you flip the page, and it's like, next issue, Kyle Rayner is alive, which yeah. I just thought was so much fun. And that's the kind of fun I want from it, like just wild, big swings, not the intense mythology that makes my head hurt a little bit.
Oh, well, but even the mythology is big swings in this book. And this felt like such a lots going on, and maybe the next issue is going to sort of get to the tip of the spear, which is what I'm hoping for here. But I've been enjoying Jeremy Adams' run on Green Lantern.
Minor Arcana, number 3 for Boom Studios by Jeff Lemire. This is the end of this first arc as our main character finally starts to accept her destiny as somebody with mystical tarot fortune-telling powers undefined at the current time. We also set up a bunch more relationships in this small town that she grew up in, that she's going to have to deal with ongoing. I think we're a little down on the first two issues. I think it snapped into place with this one for me, but how'd you guys feel?
I thought this was really touching and nice, kind of adorable, kind of sweet stuff going on here. And then, drunkenly yelling at your ex is always fun. So, yeah, I felt like this Had a lot of kind of cool stuff happening, and of course the art's phenomenal. But yeah, I like the way this is now kind of grooving and clicking. So enjoyed this.
Yeah, let out the cage, LePage is what we say based on what you just said, Pete. This is really really good. I like that it is strange to me that this, you have to hit the third part to get the emotional resonance. I think we talked about how our main character was sort of like a bummer for the first two issues. And in this issue, we get the catharsis, the emotional payoff, and the sort of more sympathy for why she's made the choices that she's made. So I appreciate all that. I think the art is good. The scene of her confronting her ex and then riding with her ex's husband in the cop car, I thought was excellent across the board. And then the emotionality of the scene when she confronts her client from last issue, I thought was great.
Summer Shadows, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by John Harris Dunning, art by Ricardo Cabral. In this issue, our main guy that we're following gets on a vampire yacht. And
never do that.
Yeah, not a great idea. At least we assume it's a vampire yacht. We don't exactly know yet, as he is trying to track down his boyfriend, who, in the smartest thing that happens in the series, I think, we continue to drive in on the fact that this dude he's chasing after wants nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
And I love that emotional tension and that idea of, like, Orpheus descending into the underworld and Eurydice doesn't want him there. Like, I think that's the essential idea of what we're getting in this comic book series, and I just think it's very smartly and emotionally done.
I agree with that. I like the way it is, like, sort of, they double down on our main guy's, like, naivete, being like, I'm just here trying to figure this out. And the person I'm chasing barely gives me any attention. Like, it's that double innocence that I think makes it pop. And like vampire yacht, yes, but like yacht, cool. Vampire dinghy, vampire rowboat, definitely avoid that.
Yeah, I mean, this was super intense.
Vampire jet ski, I'm probably getting on.
Wow.
The back or the front? Are you driving or are you riding?
I mean, if I'm on the back, their mouth is facing away from my neck. If I'm driving, that vampire's got mouth to neck instant. Instant mouth to neck. And yeah, what a great kiss to remember for our segment where we talk about the best kisses in the stack.
I mean, I was having fun, but then that creepy girl with the doll showed up, and I was like, I would jump and swim from there. Mm. So, yeah, this is scary as fuck.
I Heart Skull Crusher, number 7 from Boom Studios, written by Josie Campbell, art by Alessia Zono. Our main character, Trini, has ended up on Skull Crusher's team, and also sworn that nobody is going to die in the game of screaming paintball that they're playing in this apocalyptic wasteland. The mythology of the series has been blown out in a big way in the second arc. They're really fleshing out the world and expanding it, and also the danger for our main characters. I really, really enjoy this. I love the main earnest character of Treaty. I like how Skull Crusher is trying not to, but clearly is slowly softening towards her. And not to steal Pete's bit, but I just wanted to give a shout out to the cover, which I thought was awesome.
Now,
Pete's not going to have anything to say.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the wall behind me? Oh, sorry.
Nope.
Wrong show.
Oh,
wrong
nice.
I'd say this is cover of the week. This is really impressive.
Wow, Pete doubles down with an award.
Yep, that's right. I want a harder.
He went cover of the week.
Yeah. Great action, great story. Continue to love everything that's happening. And I love this art style, this fun manga anime that brings a lightness and a humor to everything. So, yeah, this is a blast.
This book is one of my favorites of the week now. Like, it has really become such a fun read. It's like the Friday Night Lights of comics. Like, I'm rooting so hard for this. And the art's great, super dynamic, lots of action, big, like, anime angles on all of our characters. I just have really enjoyed this book.
The Toxic Avenger, number 2 from Ahoy Comics, written by Matt Boers, art by Fred Harper. If you missed it, we had Mark Boers on our live show and sadly did not talk to him about Toxic Avenger at all.
That's too bad.
No, we talked about Toxic Avenger number 1, so go back and listen to that. But the assault on this town is continuing. We're getting some actual avenging going on in this issue. It's a real heartbreak, I thought, by the end here, which I was very surprised by.
Also, great. Love the microwave chicken fried steak instructions in the back. That was really cool. Mm-hmm.
Did you take that home?
Yeah, definitely going to take that home with me.
Take it home.
Great. I also really enjoyed this. It is very sad. And seeing characters that you're sort of like rooting for be sort of fooled and fooled again and suffering for it. I'm curious what this series is sort of pointing at. Like, it feels like I can't see the win yet. I can't even see the path to the win for Toxic Avenger here.
Turtles of Grayskull, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Freddie E. Williams II. Pete is showing off his Skeletor t-shirt, or maybe it's Skeletor's face that he cut off and is wearing on his body. I honestly am not sure. But in issue, He-Man and the Turtles have finally met each other, and they've been thrown into a battle arena by the end of the issue. Their circumstances have changed quite a bit. Pete, take it away.
This fucking rocks. I love this so much. It feels like the old school Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles a little bit with the shading and the letterboxing and all that kind of stuff. This is just, totally hits a sweet spot for me of my childhood with He-Man and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And this is just, I love this so much. I just want to live here. Thanks.
On Eternia?
Just keep cranking out. I want to read this comic for the rest of my life. I just never stop making this comic.
Wow. Well, we are going to have Tim Seeley on the live show pretty soon, so maybe you can save that compliment for when you see him.
Cool. You guys didn't like this at all?
No, I like this.
No, I liked it too. I think this is fun. I think, like, this is not dismissively saying this. This is getting the job done in terms of, like, you got to see, mild spoilers here, but like you see them together. You're hitting on the whole secret identity thing and having fun with that. Ultimately, towards the end of the issue, we end up with the Turtles on Eternia and He-Man in New York City. They're going to come back together. So it's just like the best crossovers like this, I think, have a checklist of like, that's what these are the things I want to see. And right now we're halfway through this, I assume, and we're like, yep. Hitting all the notes on the checklist, and it's very fun.
Well, the scope of the book is wild. Like, we're touching on, because it's not just the Turtles in Eternia and He-Man in New York. We have our time-displaced sort of TVA-type character from the MCU meeting a young rat who likes to watch karate. And so, like, this book is doing just so much at once. While still being fun, still being emotional. And we talked, when we did talk to Tim Seeley, Alex and I, we talked about, I was talking about how this book really leaned into the fun. And then he was saying that it also leans into the emotionality, which we did, especially in the first issue in the Splinter relationship. And it feels like maybe that's what we're going to come back to in the last couple issues.
Yeah. I think they're going to have to kill Splinter. Don't, what do you think about that?
Don't Pete? Say last couple issues. I don't like to hear that.
Last
couple. Do you think any rat ever? On the streets of New York, Pete, you wouldn't understand, you never lived in New York, but like, dude, like any rat you see, like, could be Splinter, right?
Mm-hmm. Could be.
And do you feel like if a rat, do you want to, like, every rat you see check, like, are you like a yellow belt or like where are you at? Because I wasn't like.
Well, you know, you should bow when you see a rat and just see how it reacts, and then you'll have a good idea. You know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah. Bow to every rat. Got it.
Great. Mm-hmm. Why don't we move and finish up the show with 2 advance reviews, starting off with Katabasis, number 1. This is coming out December 18th from Black Box Comics, written by Damien Bechtin, art by Rodrigo Rocha. This is about a woman who is a badass. She dies and is sent to purgatory and ultimately is fighting demons and things there, as well as trying to save a young girl. I'm not spoiling it beyond the concept, Pete.
It seems like you're spoiling
it. All right, well, I'll tell you this. No spoilers. There is a lady on the cover, and there is words as well, Katabasis, and a logo for Black Box Comics. And I don't want to spoil too much more than that, but there's a number, and that number is one.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I love this. I love this very much.
Don't spoil that you loved it, Pete. Don't let the people know.
You know, this is very much in my wheelhouse. We have a demon lady who saves kids. Spoilers. So hell yeah.
This book does a great job of laying out a complicated premise in a dutifully done way. Great art. And there's a great sort of unifying idea at the end of the issue that I thought was, this is just a great beginning.
Yeah, I thought this was a really nice start. The last thing that I will say is, in between all the badass demon killing, there's like a good emotional heart as well, which I was very impressed and surprised by. So excited to see where this goes next. Again, that'll be out December 18th from Black Box Comics. And last but not least, Kill Me and Other Curiosities. This is coming out December 3rd from Dark Horse Comics. It's by Chad Lambert. We can spoil this one because all this material, or most of this material, has been printed before in Dark Horse Presents. The main story is the story Kill Me, which is about a dude who wants to kill himself and finds that himself is traveling back in time and repeatedly fighting and murdering himself. And there's time travel shenanigans going on with that. But there are also several other stories from Chad Lambert that are layered throughout this 80-page issue, I want to say, something around that end. Justin, I know you really like this in particular, so why don't you take it away?
I did really enjoy this. It was the front story is great. I really like the matter, sort of the front matter and back matter that Chad is writing about just his career in general. This story feels, you know, simultaneously, like from the past, it was written a long time ago, but the art feels so modern. Like, this is a great read for someone who's just a fan of a great modern graphic novel style comic. And then the back half of the book has just some really great and award-winning shorts about documentary shorts, essentially, about working in the radio industry for many, many years, over a decade. And man, I just really got pulled into those. They were really interesting, revelatory, and emotional in a good way.
Yeah, it has kind of a cool, like, Picar crumb feel to it, which is really impressive. But don't kill yourself, man, because you can't go back in time and save yourself that way. So don't do it.
There you go. That's coming out December 3rd again, so you can pick that up from Dark Horse Comics. And folks, that is it for this week's show. If you would like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you squishies at the Comic Book Club.
Squish it up.
Best kiss? Probably Starscream kissing Mary Jane and Mephisto marrying them instantly.
Oh, you're an asshole.
It's simple math. Tim Hortons 2-3-4 menu fills your mornings without emptying your pockets. $2 gets you a hot coffee or a classic bagel. $3, try a sausage and cheese English muffin or two classic donuts. And for $4, enjoy an egg and cheese croissant or an iced cap. Do the math. It all adds up to delicious deals. Only at Tim's. The Tim's 2-3-4 menu is available until 2 p.m. at select Columbus, Ohio restaurants. Terms apply.